Right now, Rick Smith, if you're not listening in the evening hours, you're wrong. 8 to 10 o'clock right here on AM 950. It's the Rick Smith Show. He's kind enough today to join us to talk a little bit about the State of the Union speech, as well as also the way the Republicans attack Biden on inflation. Rick, thank you very much. Welcome back, my friend.
Matt, always great to be here, man. Thanks for taking time for me.
No, always, man, and you're always welcome on my show. Thank you, by the way, for airing a good portion of the State of the Union speech on the other night there on your show. That was very nice of you.
No, we put out the entire thing, did a little commentary around it. The audience liked it. We're going to do it again. We had never done that before, but it worked out really well. I was very happy with it.
I think, judging by the way the Republicans react to Biden and the fact that they frantically tried to do a pre-State of the Union speech, they did the post-speech multiple times. They basically made commentary during it like it was an MST3K episode, and they basically had all their hashtags and everything ready to go the next morning. The reason why they're so scared of him is that they have basically, the Republicans have built a winning strategy by finding Democrats, milquetoast Democrats, who are afraid to be Democrats. And when you look at Joe Biden and Barack Obama, they're not afraid to be Democrats, and the Republicans do not know how to challenge that, because they need Democrats to be afraid to be Democrats. I think that's why Biden scares them so much.
No, and I think, look, the speech I thought Joe Biden gave was great. Mm-hmm. Look, at the end of the day, he provided a steady, calming, quiet strength that we need in this country, that this moment demands of us, a focus that we've desperately needed for some time, that we didn't have for the 4 years of the previous guy. And that's what scares them, because mainstream America, the working class of this country, they just want somebody who's going to get up every day and going to go to work for them. And that's what Joe Biden laid out in his speech. Look, it's about making lives better. It's about helping folks who he grew up with in Scranton. Those ham and eggers, those guys going to work with the jelly boxes. It's about making lives better. And they don't know how to respond to that. When you're loud mouths and their bombastic rhetoric and the chaos merchants throwing out their flames, that they can deal with, that they want. But someone who's going to get up every day and say, hey, we're going to help you take care of your kids. We're going to help get child care so that you don't have to break the bank. We're going to make sure that you're going to get some ability to get health care so that we make sure that if you get sick, you're going to be okay. Hey, we're going to do something to help you get better wages, hours, conditions by letting you figure out how to join and form unions. We're going to go back to the way things used to be when, to steal the other guy's rhetoric, when we pine for when America was great, mm-hmm. when you had the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization, because you had strong unions, you had strong families, you had strong communities. You didn't have oligarchs and billionaires running and owning everything, Matt. And you know this.
Oh, yeah. No, and he was up in Superior, Wisconsin, Duluth Superior, up on Lake Superior today, going across one of the bridges that I think has been pegged for his replacement with the infrastructure bill, a bridge you can't get across because trucks can't get across because of the concern about that bridge. And you have these kind of things out there. These are bread and butter issues. These are good jobs. And these are obviously our safety issues. Trust me, in Minneapolis, we know about bridges collapsing. You have safety issues that you're addressing here. And to watch the Republicans just get so upset about this, it just shows me once again, the fact that they are flailing at him is that they're so angry because he's resonating because, like you said, he's Scranton, Pennsylvania. He's like the human personification of the Rust Belt himself.
Yeah, no, at the end of the day, look, it's about getting things done. And, and look, for a party that has told us they don't believe in government, they don't believe government can or should do anything, that government can't solve problems, that they shouldn't be doing anything to solve problems, they don't know how to deal with somebody who goes, hey, we got problems, let's fix them. Let's get our hands dirty, let's roll up our sleeves, let's get to work. They don't know how to deal with that. All of the bickering and all the gridlock and the delay and all the things that they've been doing all these years, that's what they understand. And I think they're afraid of the fact that by Biden coming out and speaking very clearly, and look, Biden is not Bill Clinton as an orator. He is not, Barack Obama as an orator. Nobody ever expected him to be. But he came out. He was Uncle Joe. He gave the speech. Did he trip up a couple of times? Yeah, he did. And you expect that. But you know what? He was on message. He was focused. And he was saying, look, this is what we got to do. We want to help move this country forward. We've dealt with the pandemic. We're dealing with a war overseas going on right now and a madman. And we're going to deal with all of our problems. We're going to do it. And what I loved most about the speech, Matt, is it was positive. Mm-hmm. It wasn't full of grievance. It wasn't full of, oh, everyone hates me. It wasn't the last guy. It was possible. It was, you know, when crisis happens, we pull ourselves up and we make the best out of it. We take those lemons and we make lemonade and we move forward. That's what I loved most about it, is that optimism that generation really had in their soul that I think we need in this day right now, Matt.
Rick, when you look at part of that, a good chunk of that speech and a good chunk of the news cycle for the last week and a half, it's been Putin in the Ukraine invasion. And, you know, one of the things which has been really interesting, and get your thoughts on this, is that the American people, we have been pitted against each other. It's left and right and left and right. And all of a sudden, we have the villain that, you know, you and I grew up in the 80s, you know, the Russians, yep, and stuff like this. You know, you had that villain that united us as a country. I'm starting to see that again. I mean, the Republicans initially tried to pander to Putin, but their own voters are like, no, this guy's horrible. You really do have a unification starting to happen again, because pretty much everyone hates Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, no, this could be that moment.
Yeah.
And I've been saying for a while, there's got to be a moment, a spark that brings us back together to where we get, you know, somewhere between the curbs. You know, we got to get off the sidewalks throwing things at each other. We got to get back into the road somewhere. This could be that moment. You know, I had thought for a while it was going to be all the job losses with China and all the things going on there. But this is such an atrocity. This is such an outrageous moment that I don't know how you can be on the side of Putin. And there are some, look, there are some Republicans, and you and I both know, we get the emails, we get the, you know, the crackpots throwing stuff at us.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, average, everyday, you know, working-class Americans like you and me, we look at this and go, there's one guy, one rich guy, the richest guy in the world, who's sending poor and working-class kids from Russia into Ukraine to kill poor and working class kids there. That is wrong. It shouldn't happen. And we don't want any part of this. Because what we know war kills poor and working class kids overwhelmingly on all sides of the border. But it makes rich people really, really happy. So I'm not thrilled with where we are, but in this moment Putin's the blank. Fill that in however you must.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You and I probably both see this. You know, the Trump and his supporters still want to basically say, oh, well, if I was in office, this probably wouldn't have happened. Now, considering how much him and Vlad were close buddies, maybe you could say that, but they don't want people to associate Trump with Putin anymore. And so now he's trying to float the idea that he invented NATO. NATO would have loved him. I have loved the NATO people coming back and saying, oh, no, we hated his guts. Joe Biden did all this. He brought us back together again. And, you know, it is funny. They want to take credit for it, but the only way they can is if they say, well, because his best buddy was Vlad Putin.
Well, the part of this that gets me is, and I love how we rewrite history, don't we?
Yes.
If you look at what happened during the former guy's years, I seem to remember him spreading a ton of propaganda that Ukraine was rigging the election for Hillary Clinton. I seem to remember a lot of that. I seem to remember him getting Maria Yovanovitch fired, which could have helped us, with intelligence and diplomacy. I seem to remember there was a phone call, a perfect phone call,
oh, yes,
I remember, where, you know, he basically holding aid hostage in that moment. Didn't have a White House meeting with Zelensky, turned Ukraine policy over to Rudy freaking Giuliani, and that guy was going to do something better. And, oh, by the way, let us not forget who the former guy's campaign manager was, Paul Manafort, who really is responsible for what was going on in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and let's not... Hey, Russia, I have a favor to ask of you. Oh, let's never forget that moment either. Rick Smith joining us. The Rick Smith Show is 8 to 10 o'clock right here on AM 950. You need to be listening to this show. It's absolutely fantastic. Inflation. All right. So this is, you and I both, we see this all the time. This is a multi-layered problem. There's a lot of things going on here. I want to ask you a question, though, on your thought on this theory, that the reason why the inflation has been so bad is because after 30 years of conservative policy keeping wages stagnant, people had finally had enough, And so to get people to work, they had to start paying better wages. And because of that, the corporate America is jacking up the prices left and right. Your thoughts?
See, I'm not going to go on the wage front. I'm not there yet. At is corporate America is seeing an opportunity. This is what greedy capitalists do. There's a moment. There's an opportunity to pad our pockets, to increase our profits, because you haven't seen any earnings report going, oh, gee, we're losing money, have you? You haven't seen any CEOs going, hey, we got to take pay cuts? You haven't seen that yet, have you?
No.
Of course not, because they're using the pandemic. They're using this moment to line their pockets. And workers are getting a little bit of an increase, not as much as we should be. And if we had 25% union density in this country, we would be doing much better. But here's the thing. Our problems stem from, 40 years of supply-side voodoo Reaganomics and horrible neoliberal trade policies. The fact that we can't get the things, and I think Biden touched on this in the speech, the fact that we can't ramp up production to meet needs and demands, that's a huge problem. And why is that? Because we've had 30 years of allowing corporate America to outsource our jobs to other places. And guess what? If you can't get what you need here to get on the shelves, that supply and demand thing kind of throws everything all haywire. Kind of like when I went to buy my Jeep last year, and I had to wait a while because there were no chips. And there was no haggling on price either because, hey, there's two on the lot.
Exactly.
This is our problem. And we've got huge supply chain issues. But more importantly, and this is where Biden, I love what he's talking about. The fact that he wants to bring manufacturing back, the plant going into Ohio to make chips, the fact that we're going to make electric vehicles here and batteries and make this country the center of manufacturing again, that to me is the most important message outside of what's going on in Ukraine. Out of all of this is, how do we make sure that we are that production center again? Mm-hmm. If the pandemic and what's going on in China and in Russia aren't giant flaming red balls of warning of, hey, this is a national security issue. We need to reclaim our manufacturing prowess. I don't know what is, Matt.
Well, okay, so, and by the way, and it goes back to what I said before, we built three foundries in this country and started putting out American steel again. I think that would go a long way to help out our manufacturing base, too. But how about then? Okay, I'm going to rephrase that question for you, okay? Because investors on Wall Street treat Wall Street like it's Vegas, that a company making 20 cents on the share is not good enough. It had to be 25 because that's what they gambled it was going to be. So they punish the profitable company for not being as profitable as they said it was going to be. Do you feel that is then the main linchpin of where this is at? The feeling like you have to raise the prices because you're still trying to impress a bunch of gamblers on Wall Street.
Yeah, well, look, we live our life by the quarter, don't we?
Yes.
I mean, everything is the next quarterly report. And we're competing with a country in China that they're thinking the next 100 years. They've got plans for 5, 25, and 100 years out. Now, granted, they're a much different government, much different way of doing things, but we're dealing with corporate CEOs who are thinking tip of their nose, how they can continue to line their pockets and that of their shareholders. They don't care about their workers. They don't care about you or me or consumers. You remember, I think about 2 years ago, when Jamie Dimon and the Business Roundtable had their little powwow. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And they came out and they said, now it's no longer about only satisfying the shareholders. It's no longer about only maximizing shareholder wealth. We now care about our workers, and we now care about the consumers. And I'm going, wait a second. I thought they were sacrosanct. I thought they were most important to business. No, they haven't been. And they've been the dupe in all this. And the sad reality is until we, the working class of this country, wake up and hold them accountable, I don't know where we go. Because you said a moment ago, we're divided right and left. The sad reality is that's a construct that's been thrown at us. The reality is we're divided up and down. The very wealthy against all the rest of us. They just throw out that stuff down there to keep us pitted against each other so we don't realize how badly we're getting ripped off.
Amen to that. No, I was in the grocery store, and sometimes you'll pick up a recipe and it will say you need a 14-ounce box of something. And I noticed all of a sudden it wasn't a 14-ounce box. It's a 12.5-ounce box now, and it now costs $1.50 more. And I'm like, okay, someone's making some money off of this. I will say in Minnesota, which is unique, and this isn't everyone, but this is just the numbers, that Minnesota's incomes have raised, I think it was 8.1%, well beyond the 4.3% inflation rate. So, I mean, in Minnesota, at least, when you look at the numbers, wages have actually started to catch up, and it's at least not as painful on the inflation in Minnesota as it is elsewhere, that's for sure.
No, and that's a good thing. And I would argue Minnesota's probably a state that's got a fairly high union density rate.
Yes.
I know back during the 70s, and I know my grandparents benefited from them, both of them. My grandmother was a retail cashier. My grandfather, who was a truck driver, both of their contracts had cost of living adjustments in the event of inflation. And they both got multiple raises during that contract to meet inflation. When you have union contracts that have that kind of language in, you don't have to worry about your wages being eroded by inflation. And this, is another reason why I go back to the need for strong labor unions and every worker in this country having a written contract. You know, you look at what's going on, we've seen this little bump in wages, but it's not going to be long before that bump starts being taken back. We're already seeing those wages being clawed back as we speak. And as the inflation, starts to calm down and we meet our supply chain issues, you're going to see those wages being rolled back even more. Now's the time. Join a union. Get it in writing. Have it in a contract and don't lose it. My thought.
Rick, what do you have coming up on your show tonight?
Oh, we're going to talk State of the Union. I got a bunch of stuff I want to talk about China. I don't know if you saw the View. I don't ever watch The View, but I saw Michelle Tafoya. Not a huge fan of hers, but a blind squirrel found a nut when she was talking about the Uyghurs and slave labor in China and the need to buy American products. And it was weird because the lefties on The View were, no, Americans won't pay those prices. It was the weirdest kind of reactionary, hey, you're on one side, I have to be on the other. And as Americans, we got to get past that right-left, I'm against you, whatever you say, I've got to be on the other side of. We got to listen to each other, we got to talk to each other, and we've got to actually have conversations, which is why I think what you do is so incredibly important, getting the message out.
Oh, Rick, I appreciate it. I will say this about Michelle Tafoya. I think she's going to run against Klobuchar. In for that Senate seat. And so she's trying right now to say, kind of put forward. She says she's a libertarian. Okay, whatever. But she kind of comes out and she's trying to appeal to everyone right now. So keep an eye. I think this is what her goal is eventually she's going to try to run against Klobuchar in 2 years.
No, I mean, she's a crazy conservative, Karen. That. You can see it. I mean, it is what it is. But like I said, the blind squirrel eventually finds the nut, and
occasionally,
she found this one. And here's the weird thing, Matt, and I know we got to go here in a second, but here's the weird thing. We're seeing the Republicans trying to make that pivot to talking about working class issues. And this is where Democrats had better, I've been saying, adopt a striker, find a strike line, find a worker to find out how life's going and fight for them. This is where Democrats had better wake up. Because Republicans are starting to talk about some of those issues that working class people are worried about. Jobs being on the forefront of it. This China thing is a big deal that I think Democrats could miss the boat on.
Yeah, don't be fooled by Republicans talking about how they're pro-labor. Take a look at what happened in Virginia the second that Republican governor got into office there.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Rick Smith Show is live right here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, 8 to 10 o'clock right here on AM 950. Rick, always a pleasure. Thank you so very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks so much, Matt. Appreciate it.
Take care. Rick Smith, The Rick Smith Show. Once again, if you're not listening throughout the entire evening here, it's just fantastic. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.